All right, this is Gary Parrish from CBS Sports. It's now late Sunday, January 10th, 2016. This is the Eye on College Basketball podcast, and I'm joined by Matt Norlander and Sam Vecenie. We've got a lot to get to, but let's start with the big news from Sunday, the somewhat surprising news from Sunday, if only because you don't expect a coach to get fired in January during the Golden Globes. UNLV has removed Dave Rice as its head coach. Now, I think most of us in college basketball knew this was a possibility, especially considering Dave entered the season on the hot seat. And then after the loss the other night, I guess the most recent one was Wyoming. I just saw the tweet. I wasn't at the press conference. Obviously, I didn't watch the press conference. But I saw where Dave Rice actually had a quote where he said he fully expected to coach the team on Tuesday. And I guess my point is, if you ever have to answer in a press conference midseason whether or not you think you're going to be coaching the next game, you're really on some so-called thin ice. And so Dave Rice is now out as UNLV's coach. Matt Norlander, your thoughts on the end of the Dave Rice era at UNLV?
A few thoughts. One being, Doug Gottlieb shared a photo on Twitter shortly before we started recording this podcast that next game that Dave Rice thought he would be coaching, the printed ticket against New Mexico has his face on it. So wow. That's a little weird and unfortunate. That happened, I'm not going to rack my brain. That also happened recently. I want to say last year or the year before where we had a really bizarre situation.
It was a player's face on a ticket.
Yep. Can't remember who it was. Listeners knowing will let us know if we haven't figured it out by then. Feel free to at mention us. But it was really really bad timing. Okay, so
I feel like was it a Kansas player?
I can't remember, dude. Was he at Cliff Alexander after he left? Maybe.
It might have been Cliff Alexander.
I can't remember for sure. But
hey, let's talk about some more stuff we can't remember.
So a few things here. One, I did tweet out a few numbers just on Rice overall, and I was just kind of presenting the numbers. Some people thought I was presenting them as to stick up for Dave Rice, where I've actually been pretty critical of him over the years because he's had success on the recruiting trail, and UNLV certainly had not been lighting the world on fire. In fact, Kruger had kind of been winning in spite of Lon Kruger, now at Oklahoma, had kind of been winning in spite of that to a certain degree, whereas Dave Rice got there. Recruiting took a big jump. I mean, he had the fifth-rated class in both 2012 and 2014. This past season, 13th best class, and he gets Steven Zimmerman, considered one of the best big men in the class. Obviously, McDonald's All-American and a five-star player. But the problem obviously becomes the burden that lands on your shoulders. Once you're able to prove yourself on the recruiting trail, obviously, you have to pay big dividends on the court. And there's two ways to look at it. One, Dave Rice has won 64.5% of his games since he got to UNLV, but the problem is within the league, he never went better than 10-6. He always had the highest rated recruiting class in the league since he got there, except one year when it was rated second. Simply didn't win, never won an NCAA tournament game. Each year since he got there, his win totals were going down, and his win totals this year were tracking to be the worst yet, so he wasn't doing well. I'm not huge on firing coaches mid-season. I understand that every scenario is different, and sometimes athletic directors believe that they can do that to get a jump start on possible candidates. It's my belief that UNLV probably is going to get the same guy by doing this now than had it done it at the end of the season. That's my guess, but who knows what true details. Aside from obviously a bad start, they blew a lead at Wyoming, and they're 9-7, and it's brutal overall. But the question I posed on Twitter is, I don't think this has happened. Has there been a coach in the past ever, but past three decades, that has been fired? Now, I know that UNLV put out a release that said he resigned. That's got to be bogus because you get fired, you get the payout. If you resign, you don't get the money coming to you. So I think that's
awesome. Well, they can negotiate anything.
Like they can, for sure.
I mean, they can say, hey, we'll call it a resignation. We'll still give you your money.
But it is a fire. But listen, when we get down to brass tacks, he got fired, so he didn't get paid.
Yes.
Without a doubt. Yeah. So if you eliminate the notion of any sort of scandal cutting you loose prematurely, I don't know if we've ever had a situation where a coach has won more than 60% of his games within the first 5 years at a school and been fired. But UNLV, with the recruits, with the success, and then the utter lack of big-time victories in March and in that conference led to this. It's definitely surprising, and listen, it's a major headline and unexpected in college hoops because we don't get – like UNLV GP and Sam, what would you say job-wise? I would say top 30 job, and you usually don't get those opening in January.
Well, let me ask you this, Sam. Okay, wherever it is in the country, top 30, top 40, we can debate that in a second. Where is it in the Mountain West? Is it the best job in the Mountain West?
I think it's the job with the highest ceiling in the Mountain West.
Right.
For sure.
I agree.
I mean, San Diego State's a fine job. What Steve Fisher's done there is great, but it's not Las Vegas. I mean, it's not difficult to get kids to come live in Las Vegas, I would say. So it's definitely the job with the highest potential. I think we saw that Rice was not having problems getting the kids. He was just having problems, you know, developing the kids once they got there. I remember, in November 2014, a kid that transferred to Florida Gulf Coast said that, like, nobody on the team was developing in any way. Like, they were putting in plays, but no one was really working with them on a day-to-day basis to kind of get them better. And I don't know how true that is necessarily. I don't have an insight into that, but... I mean, if that's the case, then that this firing makes sense. If the players aren't getting better while he's there, that would be a significant problem, and there's no real reason to keep him around for the full season.
Well, I think one of the things you've seen on Twitter, and we are recording this on Sunday night, so one of the things you've seen on Twitter tonight is that people say, hey, Dave Rice, nicest guy in the world. Dave Nice, really, and he is. Like, I mean, I like Dave Rice, like really the nicest guy in the world, but... like, it'd be impossible to intelligently argue that the players were getting better under him or that the team was reaching its potential relative to talent. And I think ultimately that was Dave's biggest issue. If you're going to enroll, like, that kind of record, and, like, Norlander, that's what you sort of posted about, like, that record in and of itself, like, in a vacuum, ain't bad. You know, two NCAA tournaments in your first 4 years. Who knows where this one was headed? Clearly didn't seem like it was headed the right direction, but it's also just January 10th. Could have turned it around, theoretically. But so you go to the NCAA tournament twice in your first 4 years. You're winning above 60% of your games. Like, in a vacuum, that ain't bad. But when you've had the type of talent he's consistently had on his roster, it is bad. And when you get that level of guy in your program, you better produce with them or else. Frankly, it's a little bit or a lot like what Josh Pastner is dealing with at Memphis. Yes. Like, if you look at Josh Pastner's, like, I think I tweeted this not too long ago, like, and it might still be true at this moment, but through however many games Josh Pastner had coached as recently as 2 weeks ago at Memphis, so through 6+ years, his record was identical to John Calipari's, like the same record, whatever it was. And so, you know, an outsider, like somebody who doesn't really follow the program closely, might go, oh, wow, and Memphis fans are upset? And there is some, like, wow to that. I don't want to spend 20 minutes talking about it, but there is some wow, like, what do you want from the Memphis coach? On the other hand, relative to the talent they've had in place, you know, McDonald's All-Americans and five-star recruits, they probably haven't, you know, lived up to expectations. And Dave Rice was dealing with a lot of that as well. And for, like, honestly, it's why Dave and Josh were both on everybody's hot seat list heading into this season. Like, okay, nice guy. It really does check all the same boxes. Nice guy, has recruited at a high level. But what are you doing with the recruits when you get them? I don't think Dave Rice ever won an NCAA tournament game. Josh Pastner still hasn't been to the Sweet 16. And so, and so here we are. What I find, I don't know, let's just call it interesting, is that first off, why now? I think the boosters put a lot of pressure on them. Like, they were frustrated.
This is significant. To me, it's significant pressure. I understand, yes. Like, you come off the loss to Wyoming, that's bad. It's on the road, but you really blew a big lead, and they're not.
Well, the Colorado State one was awful, right? Was it Colorado State the other night?
No, Wyoming. It was the other night, Wyoming. Literally, their most recent loss was Wyoming.
No, I know, but, like, Wednesday night, was that Colorado State?
Yes, it was.
Okay, yeah, I was in studio, CBS Sports Network, for that one, and we're all sitting there. I'm just gonna be completely honest with you. It's me, it's Doug Gottlieb, it's Brendan Haywood, and it's Brent Stover, and we're watching this thing. UNLV's up 10 with 8 minutes to play, and we watch it get cut to 8, and we watch it get cut to 6, and we all sit there like there wasn't even a contradictory opinion. Like, we all go, oh, wow, here it goes. Like, they're about to do this again. And they did it again. Like, they blew another one. And when you're a UNLV fan, my producer of my radio show, Brad Carson, is a UNLV graduate. So, like, I don't have to. I mean, it sounds like he drives me crazy. He doesn't drive me crazy. I hear it all the time. Like, oh, my God. He's so frustrated by it. Why do we blow leads? Why do we look like we can't play? Why do we get McDonald's All-Americans and then can't win with them? And I think this week was the culmination of all of that. You blow that lead to Colorado State. Then you come back and lose to Wyoming. And the boosters then put pressure on the administration to make a change now. Like, hey, we are tired of this. Let's do this now. I can't stand it anymore. And so that's how we got to what happened on Sunday. What's interesting is that I think most people know they were close to doing this after last season. And whether it was, let's give an alum another year and make sure we give them a fair shake, whatever that means, or whether it was simply a money situation, like we don't have the money to buy him out right now, so let's see how this goes. We've got Steven Zimmerman coming in. Maybe it'll turn around. Whatever the motivation was, they decided not to do it. But there was a push to do it after last season. If they would have done it after last season, you know who they could have hired, right?
Probably would have been Ben Howland, right?
Not only could they have hired Ben Howland, Ben Howland wanted the job. Like if you would have talked to Ben, you know, February of last year, January of last year. And you say, okay, what's the job that makes sense? What's the one, like, of the ones that might open? Like, UNLV was the one. Like, you know, I think he's happy at Mississippi State now. He's got recruits on the way and all that stuff. But, like, you know, given the option of moving to Starkville, Mississippi and rebuilding in the SEC or moving to Vegas and having the best, you know, arguably the best job in the Mountain West, like that's the job. So like by hesitating, for whatever reason UNLV hesitated, they probably missed on the opportunity to hire Ben Howland. And that's just another unfortunate byproduct of all of this.
It was a wild swing, by the way. It should be a reminder to any coach that enters a season on a hot seat. This was a 7-1 team, wins over Indiana and Oregon. And heading into the season, those two programs were definitely considered top three in their respective leagues. And at that point, I mean, if we had talked on December 5th, the day after UNLV beat Oregon was 7-1, and you had told us, anyone has been like, just, you know, Dave Rice is going to be gone 5.5 weeks from now. We would not have believed it no way that's going to happen. But yet here we are. So, I mean, you guys want to hit on just, listen, we're super early in this, and I actually think the candidate pool will kind of get interesting, maybe even change a little bit as we go forward. But you want to just quickly opine on reasonable and possible names here?
Yeah, I mean, I've made some phone calls tonight already, and the name I heard most often that made most sense to me, Kelvin Sampson. You know, the obviously the former Oklahoma Indiana coach. Now he's at Houston. He's got Houston off to a nice start this season. I think at UNLV to succeed, first you just have to be really good or good. Like Lon Kruger is like, you know, he's Lon Kruger, but he was great at UNLV. So I was about to say you need a big personality, but that's not true. Lon's a great dude, but he's not a big, you know, over the top personality. But I don't think having a personality hurts in that market, and obviously being good. And I think Kelvin checks both of those boxes. He's a personality, he's a name, and he's good at his job. And he can recruit, a relentless recruiter. Like, I think Kelvin Sampson would be great at UNLV.
Sam likes Kelvin more than – I don't hate the Kelvin
name. I
do. Name.
Yeah, I think that'd be a really good hire.
Steve Lavin's the other one I've heard tonight. Like, you know, Steve
– also think that'd be a good hire.
Steve Lavin comes up –
Why do you think Steve Lavin would be a good hire? People listening will see what Steve Lavin was completely unable to do at St. John's and know
was
that –
Was he completely unable to do it at St. John's?
That's the thing. I think sometimes that gets lost a little bit. Like, he didn't fall on his face at St. John's.
Yeah, no.
Not saying that he did, but a lot of people think that he was not a great coach at that program. Well, so why would you go to another program with a storied history, similar entry point, I guess, for St. John's or as UNLV? So Lavin might not seem like an honor. I'm just saying, sell people on why they might be confused on that.
Well, here's the deal. Okay, so you know, he missed like one whole season, right?
His
second season he missed. So really, at St. John's, he coached 4 years. He made 2 NCAA tournaments, 2 NITs. He went at 81-53. He went to the NCAA tournament, of course, last season, and then got removed. I think Steve would be fine there. Big personality, and you know, he has a track record of success. He's been to Sweet 16s. He's been to an Elite Eight. Mm-hmm. The argument against Steve for UNLV, as long as we're speaking openly here, what's the rap on him? Can get good players, but what can you do with them, right? Can you really maximize your roster? Like, that's the complaint about Steve, to the extent that there's a complaint about Steve. And if you just, like, literally just removed a coach who kind of had that same reputation, I think more magnified for Dave Rice than it was for Steve Lavin, but it's still kind of rooted in the same stuff, then that might give you pause. But given the candidates you're probably going to be able to pursue, I think Lav makes a lot of sense. I think Kelvin Sampson makes a lot of sense, but like let's say for whatever reason you don't want to go that direction, Lav makes sense. Pasternak at Arizona, the associate head coach, I've heard. I've heard that name.
It's interesting.
Yeah. I've heard that name mentioned. I think he just got. Where did Trier go to school?
Alonzo. Trier went all over the country, kind of. No.
But I was he responsible for that one?
I don't know enough internally about that dynamic.
I thought that did Trier finish at Finley Prep?
That sounds right to me.
I don't know. I just know that he's helped recruit well at Arizona. And some people I talked to tonight thought he might make some sense.
Yes, Trier finished at Finley.
Yeah, okay. So Finley, of course, is like in Nevada. It's in Vegas. Isn't it right in Vegas?
That I
mean, it's there somewhere. It's clearly connected to UNLV, right? So I've heard that. I'm just throwing out names that I've heard from people connected in the business.
And Henderson.
Yeah, Henderson, which is that's Vegas. It's just right outside Vegas. So yeah.
Do we think there's a chance Simon gets this job? Todd Simon was named the interim coach. I don't think we've said that yet.
There's always a chance for an interim who has some success. I mean, let's just look at USC football right now, right? Did anybody think Clay Helton was going to end up the coach at USC? But he garnered enough support among the power people, the people who make those types of decisions, and he won enough to get the job. So, like, listen, if I'm Todd Simon, I'm thinking this is a great opportunity for me. I think it seems pretty obvious at this point. One of the reasons he's the associate is because some of the money people believe in him. Like, you know, you've got a former head coach on that staff. And you've got Stacey Augman on that staff. If you wanted to, there's a lot of different ways you could. Ryan Miller, who's been an associate head coach, is on that staff. So there's a lot of different ways they could have gone with the interim coach. They went with Todd. So Todd clearly has some of the right people in his corner. And if you are able to turn this thing around, and honestly, I don't know why you can't, because like, who scares you in the Mountain West? If you turn this thing around to whatever degree, then you could build up a momentum where it could be your job. Absolutely. If I were Todd, I'd be looking at it.
Seriously,
go ahead, Sam.
They could drop like 7 more games in the Mountain West this year, as long as they win those 3 games in the tournament. I mean, they can go to the NCAA tournament. This team is that talented to where that wouldn't be crazy by any means.
No. So if I'm Todd, I'm looking at this as a big opportunity, right? Like, but if they don't go that direction, I mean, I think the names we've already mentioned are obvious candidates, probably some other Mountain West assistants, but Reggie Theus, I think his name will be, I've heard his name.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. Like, I understand he's a big name and we kind of fit, but like, has not won nearly enough. Like, UNLV shouldn't be, they got to be going for a guy. If you're going to fire a coach midseason and fire Rice, who won at the clip that he did, and again, I'm saying that fully being aware of how he did not win in March and did not win nearly enough in the Mountain West, you just make sure you get a good hire, you know? And I do wonder about motivations here. I wonder if you say it's booster influence, I have zero doubt about that. But, you know, ADs, every single athletic director in the country has a list, okay? There's a list about if I do not have my head coach when I wake up tomorrow morning, for whatever reason, who am I going to chase? Here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And so UNLV has that list, and it'll no doubt start working on that. I'm super intrigued by that. And one more quick thing on Rice, let's remember that he would be employed right now if he had taken the South Florida job.
Yeah.
That was open to him, opted not to. And at the time, you know, it was easy to see why not. They were still doing well on the recruiting trail, and it is UNLV versus South Florida. And the reason why, you know, UNLV fans think that it's the best job in the conference is because obviously it's history, it's location, it hosts the league championship and will for the foreseeable future every March. So it's definitely the reason why I think it's a top 30 job in the country is it's merely because of the amount of talent at the high school level that just emanates from there. The league that it's in, it has the potential and should be without question, a top two program in that conference year in and year out. It just has not been able to do that in recent years under Rice.
All right, let's move on because we tend to be opening podcasts by spending 20, 27 minutes on the same subject. I don't know if that's the way you're supposed to do these, but whatever. Sometimes we just get the talking. Let's move on to earlier tonight. I think while this story broke, actually, I know I what I was doing. I was watching Villanova-Butler, and Villanova ultimately wins at Hinkle Fieldhouse. And for all of the questions, some of which came from my direction, after they were run off the court by Oklahoma, now you've got a team that's 14-2 overall, 4-0 in the Big East. They've got a top 10 offense, a top 10 defense. Sam, it looks like everything's okay with Jay Wright's program, huh?
Yeah, that I don't think that should really be a surprise, should it? I mean, I know they lost those two games rather big to Oklahoma and Virginia on a neutral and an away game. But this is a team that's still tremendously talented. Josh Hart's taken a massive leap forward this year. He is probably going to be in the conversation for Big East Player of the Year, even though Chris Dunn still resides in that conference. It's just a tremendous, tremendous group who really gets after it on both ends. They can play two point guards. They can play a little bit big because of Daniel Achefu there. They have great wings. I mean, it's kind of a complete team to me that I fully expected to turn it around, because you have to assume that eventually the three-point shooting is going to bounce back. And I mean, it kind of has recently a little bit, but it's still sitting right around that 32% mark overall for the season. You'd be surprised if it didn't get all the way up to 35 by the end of the year. And the fact that they're number one nationally in two-point percentage is remarkable given who they have on that roster. So no, I was never real worried about Villanova. I don't really think there was a reason to be, and I think that they're probably the favorite in the Big East at this point.
Matt Butler, meantime, is now 1-3 in the Big East. Does that say something about Butler, or does that just say something about Butler's schedule?
Something about the schedule. They did get the road win at DePaul earlier last week, and that was one they needed because they had the roadie against Xavier. Can't expect them to win that. And then there was that big-time Providence showing on New Year's Eve where they lost the Big East opener. You don't want to lose at home, and to have dropped home games to Providence and Nova is rough, but those could – well, you know, I still believe Xavier's the second-best team in the conference, but, you know, Providence, mm-hmm. Nova, Xavier, Butler, that's your top four. Butler's is just out of the conversation to win the Big East now. It's not going to be able to make up ground. You know, it's got a road game against Providence next week, a road game against Creighton. It's just not going to be able to make up ground, especially with Villanova being the only undefeated team in the league. Overall, it's going to be a tournament team, I think. It is weird to see a Butler team like this as unreliable on defense as it's become. Watch most of the Nova-Butler game tonight, and it was low-scoring and ugly, but not in a typical ugly Butler way, I guess. And listen, Holtmann is definitely more offense-first than defense-first. There's definitely been an overall philosophical change, but it is just a little weird to see Butler winning in a different kind of way. And when it's losing, it's not losing the way that it used to. I'm not that concerned overall. I think it should get in with some comfort, but now you're looking at a situation here where you got to win against St. John's this upcoming weekend and then split the roadie, either win at Providence or at Creighton if you can, to try and keep water there. And going forward, I think they'll be okay, but any hopes of Butler contending at the top of the league are now gone.
What Butler's doing right now is the one that gives me the most trouble with the top 25 and one, because I try not to penalize teams for losing games that they're supposed to lose. And yet, so I've got them like top 10 in the country, but like they've lost three of their last four. But the losses are to – their four losses are to four teams that I have ranked ahead of them. Specifically, Xavier, Providence, Villanova, and Miami. So they have no bad losses. They've got four losses to top 10 teams, as far as I'm concerned. But and then they've got wins over Cincinnati and Purdue. But when a team's lost three of its last four, and I don't drop it, man. But
yeah, they'll be out of the polls on Monday in the AP.
No, they
I wouldn't
will
necessarily.
Not.
I still believe they might be fringe, but I still believe Butler is one of the 25 best teams in the country.
You know, they you think they'll really drop out of the top 25?
I do. I think because
I think it's 50-50.
I'll poll attack somebody over that.
Well, they're 18th,
right?
And they lose a home game, and I know Villanova is really good.
If you drop from 18 and out for losing a close game to Villanova,
I've seen worse. So
that's why we have
seen worse. Are you keeping real quick? This wasn't on our pre-podcast agenda, but I do want to run up by you since we're talking your rankings. Oklahoma won. against Kansas State by double digits on Saturday. And so I did a quick write-up, and I just said, hey, listen, with what Oklahoma did against Kansas, triple overtime, just a classic game, you know, it would be really cool to see the pollsters not just, you know, bow to their typical trends and tendencies, and let's just keep Oklahoma number two because, frankly, they've earned it. Agree with me there? What are you thinking for OU?
I've had Oklahoma number two since they lost the triple overtime game. Like, I won't. If you drop Oklahoma after a triple overtime loss at Allen Fieldhouse, like, shame on you. I mean, then you're just doing exactly what it is I mock, which is just move up and down based on wins and losses without context mattering at all. So I think it should be Kansas Oklahoma. I actually think it will be Kansas Oklahoma. I think that game was so high profile that I don't believe people will drop Oklahoma. I think Maryland will stay in at three, but that'll be interesting to see. What'll be really interesting to see is what happens with Louisville and what happens, I guess, with Butler, although I can't imagine dropping 18-26. Like I
think the most interesting team in the poll tomorrow will be Kentucky.
Kentucky, Virginia. I mean, we do have a lot of movement coming. Virginia, Arizona. Yeah, Arizona lose twice. Virginia lose twice.
The thing becomes
Kentucky's
like,
got issues.
Look, I really do think I'm the only person in the world who looks at this every single day. You can make of that what you want, but I feel like it's probably true. Kentucky still has wins over Duke and Louisville. Like when you get down there at 22, 23, 24, 25, like good luck trying to find people who have wins like that. Like they just don't exist. So
I know. Let's just real quick.
I agree.
Louisville has lost games against three of the best four teams it's played.
Well, Louisville is interesting to me because they have been, you know, they've been right around the top 10 at one point. Now I think they're 16th in the AP poll, and a lot of that was rooted in the idea that they had no bad losses. Right, their losses were just Michigan State at Michigan State, Kentucky at Kentucky. So if you wanted to believe at them, you could, but. Believe in them, you could, but once you go take a loss at Clemson and you don't really have great wins to offset it, then that's when I think you take a hit. Say, Purdue is in a similar deal, right? You
know, by the way, I will say, I mentioned the three. Yes, Purdue is very much in the same boat, but with Louisville losing against three of the four best teams it's played, that one win that it has was at NC State, and NC State is just swirling right now. 10-6, lost three in a row. And it has zero good wins either, except against LSU, if you want to consider that a good win on a neutral. So you can really just slip right down the rabbit hole, and then you start bouncing too many teams off, and then it's like, what am I even doing here? But I got – if like Louisville, to me, I kind of have fought the notion of that being a top 20 team. I buy it as a viable ACC team at this point, but there is definitely a serious case to be made against the Cardinals' overall legitimacy.
I was making, I was looking at the top 25 and one earlier tonight. That based on I didn't have Purdue losing, so I'll have to like earlier this afternoon, so I'll have to go back and adjust. I was just trying to get some extra work done while I had some free time. I was like, I'll go ahead and work on this, and then of course Purdue loses at Illinois, gets blown out at Illinois. But I had Louisville slotted in between 20 and 25. Like I didn't have them in the top 20 anymore because when you look at the resume, if you wanted to just say, hey, I know they hadn't really beaten anybody, but they hadn't lost anybody either. Like at Rupp, at Michigan State, and both losses were competitive games. Like then you can rank them kind of wherever you want based on I believe in them and they have no bad losses. But once you lose at Clemson, you can't say that anymore. It changes a lot. The most interesting team, I saw this morning. At least interesting in the sense that they are really all over the place, is Virginia. They have five top 50 KenPom wins. Five top 50. That's I think, as many as anybody else in the country. I want to say maybe Kansas or Oklahoma also has five. But that five top 50 KenPom wins is as many. Nobody has more than that. Somebody might have as many, but nobody has more. And then they have three losses outside of the top 50. So they're undefeated against the top 50, but they got three losses outside of the top 50 early in the season at GW, and then of course just past week at Virginia Tech, and then at Georgia Tech. What are they? Are they one of the best teams in the country that's 5-0 against the top 50? Or are they somebody that can lose to anybody, notably Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I think there's someone who can lose to anybody.
Let me ask you this, Sam. How much of this? I had a coach tell me this one time.
They were both road games, by the way. Not they didn't have lost both of them, but they were.
Listen,
both
Georgia, road Georgia Tech ain't bad. You know, I mean, I'm not saying they're great, but they're better than they were last year. And they played a lot of close games last year. I've had somebody tell me this. I said it was a coach. Hell, it might have been you. I don't remember who told me this, but somebody said the problem with Virginia, to the extent that there can be a problem with a team that's won back-to-back ACC championships, is that they're better than most people, but because they limit possessions in a game, they're susceptible to this kind of stuff all the time.
This is definitely something that I've said before. It's just the fact that you play fewer possessions. I mean, you think about it, like the more possessions you play, the truer the outcome should be, really.
Sure.
As far as talent levels. And Virginia, by limiting possessions, kind of makes itself more susceptible to kind of having greater variance in their outcomes, in my opinion. So it's not really it's not crazy to me when they lose these games, but I mean, they're a team that can beat anybody because they're so disciplined and so smart and very talented even. I mean, you look at Malcolm Brogdon, London Perantes, Anthony Gill's also great. Like there's a lot of talent here. It's very disciplined. They have maybe one of the three best coaches in the country as far as X's and O's and getting your guys down to where they should be. It's just, this is what happens when you play 60 possessions a game right now when the shot clock's 30 seconds long.
You mentioned Tony Bennett might be one of the three best coaches in the game, and I don't know whether it's 3, 5, 10, but he'd be on everybody's list somewhere. What's funny is on Friday when we did the podcast, we were talking about coaches in waiting, and subsequent to us recording, Tom Izzo was a coach in waiting at Michigan State. Sure. That's a pretty great one.
I thought about him, but I didn't want to say it on the podcast because I didn't know if he was a true coach in waiting.
No, he was.
Simply got the job after Judd left.
He was. I actually texted and found out.
Okay. Like,
he was definitely a coach in waiting.
Popped in my head for whatever reason. I thought that he might have not been, but okay.
Tony Bennett was also a coach in waiting at Washington State. And then the other good one, Matt Painter at Purdue, was a coach in waiting. Remember, he was the coach at Southern Illinois and then went to be Gene Cady's associate and coach in waiting.
I don't remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. He spent 1 year at Southern Illinois. So I was at Southern Illinois over the weekend, sideline duty for CBS Sports Network for the Wichita State game. And there are pictures of Matt Painter in the arena, right? And I'd almost forgotten that he was there for a year. And so I texted him. I was like, man, you had an 83% winning percentage at SIU. I was like, they should put you in the Hall of Fame here. He texted back. He said, I put in a solid 11 months of work.
Painter is awesome.
Yeah.
His team is getting a little mercurial on us here.
That was tough today. So, the other thing, going back to last Friday's podcast real quickly. I had a couple of people, and I know you guys saw it too, ask afterward, I can't believe you guys didn't talk about Kansas, Oklahoma. And the issue becomes for us, I'm speaking for myself here, you guys can chime in. We're now recording on Sunday nights because I travel every Monday morning. Like I've got a 7 a.m. flight tomorrow morning. So we're recording on Sunday nights, and then we record again on Friday mornings because I travel on Thursday morning. So basically and Tuesday feels like that's too close and we just aren't doing Wednesdays for whatever reason. So we're talking on Sunday nights and Friday. And by the time we were at Friday morning, it felt like that game was
so far removed.
But clearly looking back at it, if you expect us to talk about everything we haven't talked about yet, we should have. So I apologize to anybody who wanted to hear us talk about Kansas, Oklahoma. It's just by Friday morning, it felt like it was so long ago because that game was on Monday night. But if you want to know what we thought, I'm confident it was all what everybody else thought. It was awesome and it was fun to watch. And Buddy Hield is tremendous. And he was the player of the night. And I think Matt Norlander be the player.
CBS Sports. That happened after the most recent player of the week update. So Buddy Hield, by the time people listen to this, it'll actually probably be on the site on Monday. He's the player of the week. And he's the front runner. I mean, GP, you assembled your, so I put out a list about 3 weeks ago.
I ripped it
over
apart.
The Christmas break. You put out a most recent list of logical candidates for player of the year as we stand right now. You want to just tick them off real quick? And then Sam, you can, I have just one thought on this. Good. After Sam responds.
Okay. So I just sort of ranked them as of Sunday afternoon. You know, I just really was writing about Denzel Valentine and wanted to try to provide some context for where he might sit in a player of the year conversation after missing 4 games because of a knee surgery. And so if I were ranking them right now, I think Buddy Hield, Oklahoma, number one. Chris Dunn at Providence 2, Denzel Valentine, Michigan State 3, Bryce Johnson, North Carolina 4, 5th, I'd go Melo Trimble, Maryland, 6th, Ben Simmons, LSU, 7th, Perry Ellis, Kansas, 8th, Jared Uthoff, Iowa, 9th, Grayson Allen at Duke, 10th, Jakob Poeltl at Utah. And then, because I know how readers are, like they always are.
You're copping out right now.
They could not have been more.
You're copping out, man. Why is it copping out? You got to throw in 5 or 6 more names.
You know what? You just try to do whatever you can to like lower the amount of no love for Nick Moore, you know, like you just wait, like I got it, but
yeah, are the mentions inundating you so much that you can't sleep at night, GP, about Nick Moore?
Not anymore. Not anymore. I'm fine. I'm fine. Here's what I would say is that first off, the one that drives me crazy is like, and this happens with the top 25 and 1 basically every morning, somebody will say, it'll just be this tweet in response to it. Where's Indiana? Like, oh, listen, dumbass, if you don't see them listed, they're not listed. Like, don't ask me where they're at. Like, I had somebody earlier today say, you know, with Kentucky taking a loss to LSU earlier in the week, don't you think they ought to be lower? This is what they tweeted in response to my top 25 and 1. The obvious response to that being, if I thought they should be lower, I would have put them lower. I'm in charge of this. What, like, why would you ask me if I think they should be lower? If I thought they should be lower, I would just put them lower.
This is stuff he thinks about while on the treadmill.
It's going crazy.
Seriously.
Hey, GP, one question. Don't you think Kentucky should be a little lower? Dude, they're my rankings. If I thought Kentucky should be a little lower, they would be lower. I'm in charge of it. Nobody tells me where to put them. Why would you ask me that question? You ask me if I think they should be a little lower or higher in the AP poll. Don't ask me, dummy. I get this. All that drives me crazy. So the other one that drives me crazy is, what would be a team that's on the fringe right now? I don't even know.
Indiana was a pretty good one.
Where's Indiana? Listen, all right, you looked at the list. If you didn't see Indiana, you know they're not listed. Why would you tweet that at me? It just makes me not want to rank Indiana even more. My point being, you try to cut down on those. Well, where would you have Nick Moore? Where would you have Gary Payton? Where would you have A.J. Hammonds? So after the list, I wrote, before any complaints, anybody complains, let me say I could reasonably, and I actually do believe this, you could replace the last 4 spots with Sabonis, Ben Benthel, Josh Hart, Malcolm Brogdon, Rico Gathers, so on and so forth. And somebody actually did say, oh, you're backpedaling. I'm not backpedaling. I actually believe this. You could take I think Hill, Dunn, Valentine, Johnson, Trimble, Simmons have to be on everybody's list. And then the next 4, I think you could reasonably pick from a list of 15. And I tried to give whatever that list is. That makes it, I feel like you're calling me a chicken, Norlander.
You're a little bit of a chicken, but you just made my point. So your top 6, the player is going to be one of the top 6. There's nobody outside of the top 6.
Do you understand? If I thought Kentucky should be lower, I would have put them lower.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, GP. Where's Damian Lee?
Where is Damian Lee? I actually almost did put him on there.
Hey, and listen, Gary Payton's little boy should be in that mix.
Little boy.
17.1, 8.3 boards, 5.4 assists, and Oregon State's 11-3. I would have him right there, but my one takeaway from your list is your top 6. That's one of those 6 will be the National Player of the Year. Yeah, I agree. Kansas, you know, winning out. Perry Ellis just absolutely going bonkers the rest of the way. I just don't see – I think it's you know, just almost a given that the 6 that you mentioned at the top, one of those 6 will be the National Player of the Year.
Right.
How about some shout-outs and love to your boy who in the preseason picked Buddy Hield to win it, though? How about that?
Was that you? You did do that, didn't you?
You bet it was me.
Good for you. Now, everybody's got Buddy Hield fever now, Norlander.
I know. Hey, listen, it's okay.
He's an even money favorite right now. Oh, according to Vegas.
I think he makes as much sense as anybody. Like
Chris Dunn's at 7-1, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. It's crazy value.
Wow, he's at 7-1 right now?
I would take that at 7-1.
Without a doubt. Are you kidding?
I might take that at 7-1.
Without a doubt.
Like I may or may not have taken that at 7-1.
Yeah, I might go max bet 7-1 right now. You know, just whatever. But no, you're basically backing up what I said. The top 6 are belong on everybody's list.
Yes.
And the next 4 could be replaced. You got a list of about 15, and you can pick the next 4. It doesn't matter to me where you get them from. That's what I, that's all. That's the only, honest to God, all seriousness, that's the only point I was trying to.
Just list 10 and get out of there. That's all.
It's funny, like, because Kentucky fans chime in on everything. Bless their heart. I love them. I'm not trying to even be a smart ass here. Like anything you write about anything, like, Kentucky fans will chime in on it. Anything. Like, it'd be, you could rank the best arenas in the Pac-12. And Kentucky fans, well, what do you think about Rupp? You know, they'd want to know how Rupp compares to the Pac-12 arenas. Like, it doesn't matter. So one of the first comments I got on this was from a Kentucky fan who was, like, greatly offended that Tyler Ulis was not on this list anywhere. Could not believe Tyler Ulis was on the list. I love Tyler Ulis. But, like, what do you do with a player like Tyler Ulis who is shooting 39% from the field and 28% from three, turning the ball over twice a game for a team that's underachieving? What do you do with that?
You don't put him on the list.
I didn't think he belonged on the list. I love Tyler Ulis. I didn't think he belonged on the list.
He doesn't belong anywhere near the list right now. No Kentucky player does.
Ooh.
It's just the fact
that that's a little bit farther than I'd go. But no, he doesn't belong.
Who would you put on the list? Jamal Murray?
State the obvious. No one's even close on Kentucky to being in the National Player League discussion right now.
Let's could you put them on? If I've got 21,
yeah, guys, I was going to say there's like 25 names here.
But come on, that's ridiculous. You know, that's like, what are we doing here?
Kentucky fans, it's Matt.Norlander at CBSInteractive.com.
come at me.
Okay, so listen, let's look ahead a little bit. Monday night, there are no games. How about this? No real college basketball games.
How does this happen, GP?
How does it happen? Clearly, it's because of the college football national championship game, right? And so typically on a Monday night, we're going to have ESPN games, ESPN2 games, ESPNU games. But it seems pretty clear to me ESPN wanted no competition for the college football. It's all college football playoff tomorrow night. They're putting it at, like, you know, every ESPN channel is.
Yeah, they do that thing. Yeah, but you had a great line. I was setting you up, man.
I know. My line would be.
College football has more control over college basketball than it does over the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl.
I didn't need you to read my line, Norlander. I could have handled it myself.
You were slow to the pitch, my man.
I realize that.
Which is a great line, and it is 1,000% true.
The college football playoff has more control over college basketball scheduling, I'm going to say it with authority, than it has over the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, which is both ridiculous and true. Because they can't move the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. And that's why we ended up with these stupid semifinals on New Year's Eve. But they moved an entire college basketball schedule. Like, nobody's playing tomorrow night. In fact, I talked to Steve Forbes, the East Tennessee State coach, earlier today. They had a game schedule for Monday just because it was like they had a game schedule for Monday. They are moving it to, like, a different time. They're playing early tomorrow. And the reason is because of the national championship game. I'm not sure exactly what time they're playing. Let me see if I can look that up.
While you look that up, I'm saying Bama by 17. It's one of those things where, and, you know, let's just really quickly dip into the college football angle here, because we all like
Fighting
it. We
Forges
all watch it.
Are playing at 6.
The Fighting Forges are playing at 6.
It's one of those, like, I just cannot picture a situation. Maybe it's just because, you know, I'm coming at it in a way where people that don't really follow college basketball would vastly underrate Oklahoma because it hasn't been good in a long time. But, like, I cannot picture Clemson in a national title game beating Nick Saban. That's all.
I kind of like the idea of Dabo winning. I struggle with this.
I like the idea of it, but I'm trying to picture Clemson. And I'll be honest, I don't really have a rooting interest. But if you ask me to pick one that I'd rather see Clemson win tomorrow night.
You know what? Like, typically by the time we get to this, like, level game, I kind of know who I want to win. Like, independent of who I might wager on, I kind of know who the story that I would prefer. I really like Dabo's story, and I more to the point, I like how openly he discusses it. Like, I don't know if you guys saw, last week his brother was arrested.
Yeah, how crazy is that?
Yeah, well, how about this? How crazy is that, right? It is crazy, except it ain't really crazy. Men going through divorces get charged with all sorts of crazy stuff all the time, like stalking and
threats. I know. I'm not saying. I'm no, just but, saying, but here's, like, my point. It happens right when his brother is about to coach for his first national championship.
What I liked about first off, I hate the story. Right, his brother apparently has had substance abuse problems, and it's been a nasty divorce. And the guy sounds like a creep. And There's domestic violence allegations in his past. Like, the guy doesn't sound like a good guy. What I liked, so I don't like the story, but what I, you know what I mean. What I yes. liked about the story was, you know, this is put on Dabo's plate just like 4 days, 5 days before the national championship game. Like, you know, the biggest day of his professional life. And you know how coaches are, especially football coaches. Like, you take that kind of story to Urban Meyer. Like, Urban Meyer wouldn't even talk about, like, his own guys getting in trouble, his players getting in trouble, much less, like, his brother, who's an anonymous man for the most part. And they took this to Dabo, and he talked about it. He said, you know, he didn't say, I'm here to coach football, I'm here to talk about my team, I'm only focused on the game. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, but essentially, I love my brother, but he is almost 50 years old, and he has a long history of making poor decisions, and I've done everything I can to help him, but at some point he has to help himself. And it was just sort of a continuation of him talking about this incredibly dysfunctional family from which he originates. You know, alcoholism in his family. You know, he's talked about growing up and like police cars being at the house was fairly normal. Lived with his mom throughout college. Like, this is a guy, you know, I think we're used to athletes, you know, having to overcome incredible odds to get to where they are. But it isn't always the case with coaches. And this is a guy whose life resembles, you know, an impoverished, you know, athlete born into incredible circumstances, more so than it does, you know, resembles like your typical coaching story, right? And so I sort of like that story. So I sort of like the idea of Dabo winning. On the other hand, I also am a big fan of greatness. I don't know. I think I've talked about this on radio before. I don't know if I've ever talked about it here. Like, I root for LeBron James because I like the idea of greats being great. You know, I used to root for Tiger Woods because I like the idea of greats being great. And I sort of like the idea of Nick Saban being great. Like, you know, winning a fifth national championship, pulling to within one of Bear Bryant. So, like, you know, in college coaching, every opportunity you get that you don't take advantage of that is one you might not ever get back. In other words, this could be his opportunity to get to five and set him up to get to six. And if he doesn't get this one, he might not ever get a chance to get to five or six or seven or whatever. So I kind of typically root for that. So I'm conflicted here. Do I root for Dabo's story or Nick Saban's greatness? Help me. What should I do?
Root for whoever you put money on.
Oh, I'm going to do that, right? I'm going to do that. But I typically, you know, like, I tend to bet on what story I prefer. I figured out a long time ago, like, ain't none of us any good at this, like picking game stuff, right? So I stopped trying to analyze stuff and I just go, okay, what would I prefer to happen? All right, now I'm going to root for that. And so, like, the way I would typically bet on a national championship game is by betting simply on what story I would prefer. The problem here, of course, is that I'm not sure what story I prefer.
Okay, so who do you guys think is going to win?
I think Alabama's going to win.
I think Alabama's going to win.
Yeah, okay, me too. Wrap it up with the games, GP. There are just I can set it up if you want for Tuesday and Wednesday. We just – top five teams are going on the road, so we could have a situation here where we've just got some waves coming with Kansas on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, you've got Duke and Oklahoma playing away from home. You know, so we do have some interesting stuff happening midweek.
Well, I think you've got
and Miami, Virginia's.
That's the one I was going to bring up, right? You got Miami at Virginia. Miami will probably be in the top 10 of the AP poll for that game. Virginia, of course, on a 2-game losing streak. You get Kansas at West Virginia. You get Iowa State at Texas. Ooh, there's another one that's
You get Maryland and Michigan. I mean, there are a bunch here. Yeah. You would think it's going to be a shakeup week. I would certainly think so.
Yeah, and Tuesday night should be great. But yeah, Miami going to Virginia, that's just tough. I mean, you could be literally the number one team in the country and go lose at Virginia, right? I mean, that mm-hmm. nothing crazy about it. And then, you know, West Virginia's 14-1. You know, lone loss to Virginia. So like the top ranked team in the country, I wonder how significantly, if at all, will Kansas even be favored in that game? I bet it ain't much.
I would think they won't.
How about this? Yeah, I bet I looked at
Kim Pom. I think it'll be like 1 point for Kansas.
Yeah, Kim Pom's got it as a West Virginia win.
How much, though?
78-77.
Yeah, probably one, yeah, maybe 1.5 West Virginia fair. West Virginia is one of those teams where they just haven't had a lot of high profile games. People really aren't sure how good they are this year. But I mean, they're pretty freaking good. And Huggins, you know, his programs, his teams just don't stay down for too long. So that's just a huge, it's a huge opportunity for him. And that'll be one where if they get the win, you know, West Virginia will be on everyone's radar going forward as certainly a team within the Big 12 that opens up things. If Oklahoma can take care of business on the road, Oklahoma State on Wednesday, that's obviously Bedlam rivalry game. We'll see. OSU doesn't have the homie Phil Forte for the rest of the year, so they're obviously hampered in that regard.
So disappointing.
But, you know, listen, it should be interesting. Duke goes to Clemson. Clemson's not been great, but they did get the win over Louisville. And if they beat Duke, it just, you know, could kind of blow up the ACC a little bit there as well, or at least just open it up for North Carolina in a huge, huge way.
You see what I'm saying? Like, if I thought Kentucky should be lower, I'd have them lower. You don't have to ask me that. Do you get it?
I get it, man.
You can subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast on iTunes. You should do that. It's the quickest way to get your...
I tried to open up Sam to talk more on this podcast, but I can't shut up. It's basically last week's podcast.
Is it? Do you feel like Sam didn't participate this week?
I feel like I...
He Sam, did. Do you feel like you participated?
To be fair, I was just like kind of throwing my little basketball up in the air for the last like 15 minutes. I probably could have hopped in at certain
points. No, hold on. Before
maybe,
we wrap it up,
maybe
Sam,
next week I'll try and jump in.
Sam,
no,
like,
before we wrap it up, Sam, you pick a topic right now, Sam, that we did not get to that you want to talk about. Go.
We should talk about Alonzo Trier at some point.
Okay, let's talk about that now.
Alonzo Trier is out.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening, Sam. We appreciate that. You can catch the Eye on College Basketball pot.
I am the Matt Damon of this podcast.
That's great.
That was always funny when Kimmel did that. Yeah. Like, that made me laugh every time.
Paris, let's talk more about how funny that is. Sam, what were you going to say?
No, that, you know what? If you wouldn't have stopped me right then, I would have gone the next 5 minutes talking about Matt Damon and Jimmy Kimmel. And we would have totally forgot about Alonzo Trier.
You're already starting. Sam, go ahead. Talk about Trier.
Alonzo Trier, he'd been really good for the last month since the calendar turned to December. He'd averaged like 18 points a game on a 67% true shooting percentage. He's really good, and now Arizona is going to be without him.
No Boom. Wonder we don't let you talk. your analysis is that Alonzo Trier is really good, and now they're going to be without him.
Yep. Done.
Hey, see what you've been missing, guys? For all you out there that want Paris to shut up, you see what the alternative is, right?
He just dropped a true shooting percentage on you.
I did.
Hey, I know what I want to talk to you about. Norlander finally wrapped up making a murder.
We can listen. We cannot get into this right now. One, guys, because I'm sure we have listeners who haven't finished.
Like an hour.
I honestly,
know what you think, Norlander. You don't want to talk about it?
No, I'm fine to talk about it, but
it's also late. I got to go to bed.
It's late, and there are so many layers. Anyone listening is probably still binging. Next week, maybe just a quick 3-4 minute thing on it.
I can't do anything in 3-4 minutes.
That's also very true. But I know people are still like, people are like what I was a week ago when they're just like trying to live their life. And they can't dodge these spoilers like for the life of them. So I don't want to infect their podcast listening.
All right, fine. Let's go to sleep. You can subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast on iTunes. Go do that. Yeah, that's the quickest way, like I said earlier, to get your hands on the latest episode. So knock that out, and then we will talk again a little later on this week. Till then, take care.